There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to be back. Had spent last week, the majority of it, in Washington at the Federation for American Immigration Reform event. And it was good with Jeff Poore up there as well. A big thank you to Dalton filling in on Friday's show. But I'm back. And we got a big week here and a great show coming up for today. Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News and Capital Journal, joined me at 1 o'clock. I got some stories to talk about. Number one that came off his Capital Journal show on Friday. And some of his updates in the email this morning. We'll talk about some national news and state news as well. But this hour, it's always a treat to get him back into the studio. And he talked to me a lot when he was AL1's congressman. He's still talking to me now when he's Mobile Chamber President and CEO. Congressman Bradley Byrne, good to see you.
Sean, it's good to be back again.
It's there's so many things I want to talk about this hour. Obviously, your job as CEO and president of the chamber, talk about what's going. I'll give you this. Congressman told me a second ago off the air. He said he feels so good about our economy. You use what term?
Recession proof.
You make me nervous.
Well, if you knew what I knew about what's happened around here. We are on fire for all the right reasons. And I'm just pleased as I could be with what the future holds, short-term and mid-term. Our big worry right now is we've got to get more people to move here and take the jobs that we're creating, and we've got to get more people in this area trained and educated so they can fulfill those jobs.
This is the same thing you said last time to me, that one of the things, I was like, what is needed in our economy? And you, it was first, second, and third were people, right?
Yeah, people who are willing to work and have the skills that we need to do the jobs we have out there. But people ask me, what are we short of? And right now, we're kind of short of everything.
Okay.
I'll give you an example. Every accounting firm I've talked to in town says they can't find accountants. Now, I just sat there and thought, we don't have enough accountants. Who'd have thunk that?
Right.
But we've got to add 1,000 assembly workers at Airbus in the next 3 years. Same period of time, we got to get about 2,000 people out of the shipyard at Austal. And if one of the shipyards down in Bala Batri gets this Coast Guard contract, that's another 250 shipyard workers down there. And then we've got to have 1,000 new workers at this aluminum plant that they're building up in Bay Minette. Now, I haven't talked about everything else, just those.
Right.
If you tally that up in your head, that's 4,000 new workers.
So, but do you think that... Because if you come in, you put something up, and you have a better pay rate, there'll be some shifting, right? Some horizontal movement like that. But last time you also said the dearth of people that would fill those roles, y'all were even thinking about soliciting outside of our area, Mississippi, Northwest Florida.
Oh, yeah, even beyond that now. So we're going to start a marketing campaign in some of the major metro areas in this country to say, if you're tired of the crime, if you're tired of the high cost of living, if you're tired of high taxes, we've got jobs for you, and start recruiting those people. We created the Mobile Workforce Alliance, had our first meeting on Friday. So it's all the school systems, both of the community colleges, University of South Alabama, our Workforce Development Council, and some others, all in one room. And we said, okay, Sandy Stimson's not walking in that door with a magic wand that's going to solve this workforce problem. You know, Governor Ivey's not going to come down from Montgomery with some new project. Mm-hmm. Only we in this room can address this. And so we're coming up with an action plan, and we're going to meet monthly and hold one another accountable. So we're going to do a better job of getting into schools and talking to students about what's out there. We're going to do a better job of working both community colleges together and the community colleges with the K-12 system. The University of South Alabama has stepped up in a major way to offer non-degree certificate programs in areas where we have great needs.
Yes.
So making all of this work together, holding one another accountable, and making sure that we're focused on the stuff that's going to matter, I think it's going to be a success story. Just like our recruitment of these new businesses is a success story, I think our ability to get this workforce is going to be a major success story. And it's going to bring more people to this area.
Yeah, but the question, though, is what's wrong, to quote a longtime Alabama House member who has passed, what's wrong with the people we got? Right? I mean, that's, I'm just asking it frankly.
Well, we don't, we have a labor force participation rate that's way too low. We got people that simply aren't in the workforce that we're going to have to go grab.
But they could be.
They could be. We've got jobs for all of them, okay? Now, some of that's our fault for not getting out there and doing a better job of marketing to those people. And that's part of what we've got to do here. That's one of the reasons why we're working with the school systems, et cetera. But, you know, we got people sitting in certain parts of Mobile that don't have a car,
mm-hmm.
and they can't get to work.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, we got to figure out a way to get them to work. We may have to have like a central area where we have a bus that picks up people in certain inner city areas.
Well, and if it's takes important enough to the businesses, it seems like that would be a cost that they would bear.
Well, we actually have a group that's working on how we put that together, how they've done it in some other places. So we're going to solve that problem. We're going to remove that roadblock to somebody okay. getting to work. We're going to get them the ability to go back and forth from their homes to work. We're going to have to start looking in some rural areas that we haven't recruited before around here, as you mentioned earlier. There are metro areas around the United States where people are looking to move, and we're going to go do what we can to market to those folks and say, come on down.
I mean, so it is to a point where you don't believe in the short term. We feel it from people that live right here. There's a reason to recruit out of our area.
Yes, I think there is.
It should be a wake-up call for folks. I mean, the salaries would be, or the hourly rate would be interesting enough for somebody to pick up from Anywhereville, USA, and move here?
Yes, because it's not just the job. We're offering them a better quality of life.
Okay.
Because we don't have the cost of living here that you have in some of these metro areas.
Sure.
We don't have the high taxes that they've got in some of these metro areas. I know sometimes people complain about the crime here, but it's nothing compared to what you see in these metro areas, and some not too far from here. So, yes, we're going to go advertise there. Now, we'd rather get local people to take these jobs.
That's what I want.
100% of the time, we'd rather have local people. But we're to the point where we are going to go make extra efforts to get local people to get these jobs, but we're not just going to sit around and wait. We're going to go out and get the people we need to get to do the work.
You talk about the partners in this and what they're doing at the University of South Alabama. So I had an interview a while ago with a program they're working to get people in chemical companies around here.
Yes, that's one of their certificate programs.
You do this, I was told by the general, Duffy, he said, you do this and you will get an interview, a guaranteed interview if you go through the
100%. So I tell people all the time, you need a job, I can get you a job. Depends on whether you want to do that job and if you have the skill level to do that job.
Okay.
And I'm very grateful to South Alabama for your typical four-year college doesn't think about giving somebody a non-degree certificate. Well, the University of South Alabama has, and they're a major player in the effort that we've got going on here.
Okay, but then we have AIDT and others. Like you mentioned also, you talk about Airbus. What is the impediment between that high school senior this year, coming up, they'll be graduating in 2023, and getting one of those jobs you talked
about? There is no impediment. I can guarantee you, if you're a high school student, a senior in a high school in Mobile, Alabama today, if you want a job, we can get you a job, no question about it. Now, you're going to have to learn a skill.
Okay.
So I asked the lady at AIDT that's doing the welding training program. I said, okay, let's take a high school senior.
Mm-hmm.
They graduate from high school. Let's say they graduate early. They graduate in December,
okay.
and they're ready to go in January. How many weeks do you need to have them in your training program before they have, basic enough skills to go out and actually start welding for Austell or whomever? And she said 16 weeks. Okay, so I'm 17 years old. I've graduated from high school early. I give 16 weeks of my life to getting a skill that guarantees me not just a job, but a career,
mm-hmm.
a lifetime career.
Mm-hmm.
We can offer that to every one of these students in Mobile County. Now, the statistic I heard on Friday is that about 3,000 to 4,000 of our students in Mobile County, once they leave high school, aren't going on to get a academic degree at college.
Okay.
All right, that's the lowest hanging fruit of all.
Right.
We should be aggressively talking to those students right now about what their options are when they graduate, when they leave high school in December or May of next year.
You know, I mean, we're both high school seniors at some point. The incentive to me, the carrot should be hung out there, are some of the numbers of the hourly rate that people make at these jobs.
Well, it's not just your hourly rate. You know you're going to be working overtime.
Right.
So you look at what you're actually going to be making during the year. I never had a hope of making that much money when I was 18 years old. Well, they not only have a hope, they have a guarantee. Because we are producing that many jobs. And one of the things we've got to get out of people's mind is that somehow working in manufacturing is like dirty or unsafe. These manufacturing jobs are no longer like that. They're like some of the safest jobs you can have because every one of these employers have a major incentive to make it safe.
Mm-hmm.
One lost day from one employee costs a company a lot of money. They just don't have that to give. So these are good jobs, high-skilled jobs that provide you with a lifetime career in a field that, you know, we couldn't have imagined to have had this 20 years ago. Well, now we got it, and we can build on it and keep going. So here's the thing. I've said this before, and some people have sort of looked at me when I've said it. 3 years when we mature that line at Airbus,
mm-hmm.
Mobile, Alabama will be the fourth largest producer of aircraft in the world. Okay, the fourth largest. At that level, we can now start actively recruiting the suppliers to Airbus.
Mm-hmm.
They're now shipping their stuff here and get them to locate here and make their part of their component right here in Mobile. That's going to start happening.
Because that was always the thing that I thought that was part of this formula that was so big, that you got the whale, right? You land the whale, and then you get the ancillary companies come in, and then they hire, you know, instead of, they may not hire 1,000, but they hire 30 or 40 or 50,
right.
But there's 10 of them or whatever.
It all adds up. We've seen this upstate with the big automotive OEMs. So you get a Mercedes,
mm-hmm.
and then you start getting Mercedes output to the point where suppliers of Mercedes move here. So you find that you get almost as many jobs in the suppliers,
mm-hmm.
in some cases more jobs in the suppliers, than you have at the OEM. So we're getting ready to see that in aviation. As we build up shipyards,
mm-hmm.
as we build up other advanced manufacturing like this aluminum plant in Bay Minette, I mean, we are one of the most economically dynamic places in the United States of America today.
You've seen a lot of places. You're saying that?
Yes, sir. I'll tell you a story. I heard this the other day. There was some big conference in Charleston, South Carolina, about a month ago, involving people that do development and investing around logistics, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So think the port, think the warehousing that we're doing in West Mobile.
Sortation centers, rail, all that.
All that stuff.
Yeah.
There was some guru making the presentation, PowerPoint, you know.
Right.
He stopped in the middle of his talk, took off his glasses, looked at this room full of people and said, everybody in this room needs to start paying closer attention to Mobile, Alabama.
Really?
The reason we know about it is that one of the people that works for the port got a text from a friend of hers that was in the room when that person said that.
Wow.
So this is our moment, and I keep telling everybody, we have got to seize this moment and make it happen.
So, and also what you're saying to everybody else is this is what insulates us from this recession that I believe we're in already.
Well, the Navy needs more ships.
Mm-hmm.
Airbus has got a backlog. That's not going away. The people who've been in this aluminum plant know that we've still got to have aluminum. So our steel plants, we've got at least one of our steel plants thinking about expanding.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as I look out there, as I talk to people, and that's my job, is to understand what's going on in our economy, I don't see it slowing down. I see it speeding up.
If you're just joining us, and this is a conversation that we had had in the past, but if you have the youngsters or even yourself and looking for a new career, this is you've said this every time you've been in with me, that this is the time to act. We'll talk more about this with Mobile Chamber President and CEO, Congressman Bradley Byrne. Also, I'm going to lean on you to talk about Ukraine some.
Sure.
Okay, we'll do that when we come back. More Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 1225, FM Talk 1065, and we continue our conversation on a lot of different fronts with Congressman Bradley Byrne, also the Mobile Chamber and President, CEO of the Mobile Chamber. And we'll talk some more workforce, but I do want to talk here before the news, and we'll come back. Situation in Ukraine. You've been good. You've been on with me since, gosh, not long after the invasion happened in February. And, you know, your time in Washington, your time on the committees. Obviously, you don't have the same information now, but you had a chance to spend time with what is now the people that are fighting for their country in Ukraine,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I was impressed with them the first time I met them, that they had the will, the motivation to defend themselves. And boy, have they proven that. And now they've got Russia on its heels and Putin so desperate that he's doing what he never wanted to do, which is apparently a general mobilization of his people. And it's not going well. The mobilization is not going well. Now, just putting a human being in a uniform doesn't make him a soldier.
Right.
And so he's grabbing just about anybody. I mean, they're going up as old as 50, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me tell you, nothing wrong with being in your 40s, but you're not quite as spry in your 40s as you were in your 20s.
And you're less pliable, even with Russians. But, I mean, I think that's why they always want to get folks young, right, into the military, because as you get older, you might not be as pliable and team-oriented,
and,
right?
You know, you got to learn new stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, modern warfare is not, you know, bang, bang, shoot 'em up. There's a lot of technology involved. We were talking before we went on the air about this great video out there of a Russian tank flying through some village and running into a tree. Well, somebody didn't do well in their tank driving course,
right.
You know. They get in a lot of people who have uniforms on, but they're not very capable as soldiers. Now, the Ukrainians are getting a lot of new people into uniform, but they're so darn motivated. They're learning very quickly how to operate all this high-tech stuff that we're sending over to them. And they're beating the Russians. Right now, they are beating the Russians, which I did not think was going to happen. But
nor
it's
did
happening.
I.
It's happening.
And I want to come back to that in a little bit, because this idea of, you know, I have this great Russian army at Stalingrad idea in my mind, where the green machine will just continue to throw bodies at it till they win. But let's go back to the mobilization for a second. Politically, what does that do in Russia? Because, I mean, you're talking about it from a military aspect, and they're not ready, but this special military operation, they called it, right? That seems the patina's come off of that.
Oh, yeah.
So I mean, now, when you start conscripting people.
Now the average Russian citizen can't look the other way.
Even if the TASS news agency says, oh, everything's fine. I mean,
you're seeing protests across the country. You're hearing people inside the government criticize the mobilization, how it's being carried out. I mean, it's beginning to erode on him, and he's got to be worried. And he did not want to do this because he knew he was going to have this sort of dissension. Mm-hmm. Well, that shows you how desperate he's become, and that's not a good thing for somebody that has as many nuclear warheads as he's got to be desperate. That's a bad thing.
Yeah.
So I don't, you know, Sean, you've asked me this every time we talked about it. I have no idea what the end game is here. I don't think anybody does. It's like Ukraine takes a step, Russia takes a step. We seem to be getting deeper and deeper in this hole, and it's not going to be over anytime soon, I don't think.
Yeah, and we have about a minute here for the news, but we'll come back and talk more about this. I've been saying that the offensive by the Ukrainians was important, obviously militarily, but also politically, because the squeeze that's going to happen this winter in Europe, Ukraine had to show that they had a chance, right?
Yeah.
To keep the arms coming.
Yeah, and, you know, they've proven themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And now...
But on the offensive, really, that's the... they showed themselves they could, you know...
They're taking back land that they lost. Mm-hmm. No one expected them to do that, I don't think.
No.
They did, but I don't think most of us expected it. And so now the European people are with them. And the European people are going to have a cold winter. They're going to have to turn the thermostats down. They're going to have to wear sweaters and other warmer clothing that they used to have to do. And but I think the people of Europe are with the Ukrainians. I think they're willing to do it.
And that's going to be interesting. Because Germany, it seems like which side of the mouth is talking. You know, they're still buying, even though it's a reduced rate, they're still buying tons of Russian energy.
Yes.
So they're funding Russia on one side of the war and yet sending supplies to Ukraine on the other. We're coming right back. More with Mobile Chamber CEO and President Bradley Byrne, Congressman Bradley Byrne, our guest on Midday Mobile.
Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you all along. Get to questions from the text line here in just a second. Mobile Chamber President and CEO, Congressman Bradley Byrne, my guest. Always a treat to talk with him and talk in Ukraine, which he's been doing with me since right after Russians launched the invasion into Ukraine. And, if somebody would have bet on something like this, I would have not bet that at day 216 or wherever we are that we'd be in this situation.
It's amazing. It was amazing that they beat him in the initial stage. Then Russia consolidated, started going down to the east and the south, and had some success. Now Ukraine's pushing them back from that success. Mm-hmm. I never would have predicted that. But hats off to the Ukrainian people. They said, no, we're not just going to lay over. They're acting the opposite of what we saw with the people in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. They're standing up. They're pushing back. So I think this is a world-changing event. It is a world. It's already changed the world. But it's hard to say, all right, where does it go now?
Because that's the big question.
I don't know, and I don't think anybody knows, because somebody's going to have to change either Putin's mindset or Putin.
Right.
I mean, he's either got to go or he's got to completely change his mindset, because right now he's headed down a bad road for the Russian people, and now the Russian people are beginning to see it, and that's why it's such a politically bad situation for him.
So what the off-ramps become limited in that situation, which brings me to this scary discussion. So we got this fist fight going on, but the guy has a gun in his back pocket. That's a nuclear weapon.
Yep.
And he's getting beaten.
Yep.
And he's losing support from behind him. So what happens? You heard there's been saber rattling since day one. Not that they've talked about being a nuclear power and having nuclear weapons and all these things, but the rhetoric really ramped up to the point that President Biden went to the UN. I mean, he did talk about our response if Russia would use nuclear weapons. He quickly switched into his green policy of his Inflation Reduction Act. But for about 5 minutes, he was on message. And then it's come out now, Jake Sullivan saying, the quote here, U.S. will take catastrophic action if Russia uses nuclear weapons.
Yeah, pretty strong language coming from the Secretary of State. Yeah, it's very strong language. Well, what we are worried about, have been worried about, is going to use a tactical nuke out there. And they've been talking about tactical nukes for a while now, so this is not a new thing. Well, if they do it, what does the rest of the world do? Say, okay, it's okay that you used a tactical nuke, or just pass a UN resolution against it? I don't think so. I think NATO and the United States take some action opposed to that. Now,
what do we do?
I don't know. I don't know.
And I also worry about the fact that, you know, you had the sham referendums the other day, the People's Republic, Phil and Donetsk or Luhansk or wherever, that the Russians are now saying those areas, plus Crimea, those are sovereign Russian lands now, right? So any attack in those areas after the referendum, they would be akin to crossing the border into Russia and attacking them, which they're setting up their own reasoning for being able to punch back really hard.
That's their rationale, but I don't think it's playing out anywhere else in the world. I think that's just totally internal Russian stuff. I don't think anybody else agrees with that. So they can say that all they want, but I don't think that changes anything on the ground. And that's where it matters right now. Remember, the German army comes rushing through Poland, takes over Poland to go after Russia, and they flip Poland one way. Then the Russians push back against the Germans, flip it back the other way. Things flip in wars like this. It doesn't mean that you've actually got control on the ground. I don't think Russia has control of much in Ukraine outside of the Crimea.
Right. No, I agree. But if it seems like they're giving us a tell, you know, that these are now sovereign Russian lands, so any attack, once the referendum goes through, then these things, they voted themselves to be part of Russia, so therefore any attack that goes on in Luhansk or Donetsk is the same as attacking, you know, Moscow.
Other than inside Russia, I don't think any of that matters on the ground. I really don't. I think it comes back to the same thing we've got right now. Does Russia have the military capability to push back against the Ukrainian forces that are routing them right now? We don't know that yet.
At some point, in a conventional war in theater right now, they don't. But tactical nukes, whatever, right. Whatever enhanced measures maybe they do. Sean says on the text line, we are beating the Russians. Don't forget it's the U.S. and NATO at war with Russia.
Well, it's not our people. It's our weapons. It's our technology. It's probably our intelligence, you know, but it's not our people. So, yes, we've proven that our weapons, our strategic way of approaching these wars, our tactics, our technology is clearly superior to Russia's. But we are not physically on the ground. There's no American life that's on the ground. Nobody in American uniform is fighting. So we are not at war with Russia. But because our technology, because our weapons are out there, we're showing them and we're showing everybody else in the world we still have the mojo out there. They don't.
And Sean went on to say, why doesn't anyone advocate for peace? We sure aren't. And you know, this is a question I ask on the show a good bit. I go, where is the off-ramp for peace? You know, Kissinger was the commentary about, okay, we sue for peace now. And then people are saying, well, Ukraine wants to have a little more to come to the bargaining table with. But it sounds like the message, which I understand. I mean, if I'm in the War Department or propaganda department in Ukraine, I'm not going to say anything. You know, then total victory. But I mean, is there, and is there a level where Russia saves face, Putin saves face, and
I don't know how he saves face right now. That's the thing that bothers me is he just keeps digging a hole for himself, and I don't know how he gets out of that. But let me just say this: I think we should all want peace. I mean, this is not good. Okay,
correct.
This is not like an enjoyable, pleasurable experience. Particularly if you live in Europe. But Russia's not interested in talking about peace. And I don't think Ukraine is interested in talking about peace right now.
I mean, so where does that go?
It goes, I mean, somebody wins, somebody loses.
So what does losing look like, though? You know, that's losing, my tough thing. I mean, it's not like
losing means regime change in Ukraine. Losing on the other side means that Russia gets pushed back across the border in Luhansk and Donetsk. Losing does not include losing Crimea. I don't think Russia's going to lose Crimea. But they could lose everything that they've gained in Luhansk and Donetsk. They could.
I will say, I think that for the Ukrainians will be, it's already been very bloody for the Ukrainians. And the spin machine doesn't talk much about the losses the Ukrainians. I mean, they're fighting like true warriors, but they're taking terrible losses.
Yeah, there's no question.
If they go into Donetsk or Luhansk, the Russians have had, their infrastructure is solid there. You know, when the Russians have pushed into places where Ukrainians were ready for them, they had infrastructure to push them back. But Russians have had time, decades, you know, to reinforce.
Well, they had people there who they have brought into this battle. And a lot of the losses that the Russian forces have been people that were Ukrainian, that were pro-Russian. So a lot of those people,
they're putting them in the grinder. Yeah.
And so how many of those are left? I don't know, and I don't think there's any way for us to truly know. But if we're having the sort of success we're having up in the Kharkiv region, you got to think it's not nearly as many of them as there were. And oh, by the way, the pressure's not off in the south because there's still an effort to take Kherson. And if they take Kherson, you watch, they'll go try to take Mariupol back. Mm-hmm. And my God, if they take
Mariupol,
what does that mean? Sean, there just isn't a good, clear, nicely wrapped answer to how this war ends. It doesn't end anytime soon, from what I can tell.
We've been in, you know, police actions, war against terror, these things over the decades. This idea of total war, you know, because so many times references made that it hadn't been anything like this for Russia since World War II, and this other thing since World War II, because that's the benchmark. But in World War II, you had complete victory.
Right.
You had Americans and Russians and English and other allies standing in Germany, standing in Berlin.
Right.
That's victory. Foot on the heel, on the throat. That doesn't happen in this. We don't roll troops into Moscow.
No, we don't go to Moscow.
So how do you ever say that war is over? It may just be does this go on years, decades?
At some point, someone's going to have to push Putin, or somebody that takes Putin's place, to the bargaining table and tell them, this is all you get. And there's only one thing in the world that can do that to Russia, and that's China.
And I wanted to talk about that, because you have been a student of China. You were early on in Washington, coming home here, giving the warnings about China and the ramp-up in China. It's proven to be true. Xi Jinping meeting with Putin. He met with some others out there. What do you think they talked about behind closed doors? What do you think this...
Well, we know what the Chinese have said that they said. We know that Putin has basically agreed with it, which is they have told him that he needs to be careful with what he's doing, that this war needs to be over, and that they need to find some way to get it over. But, you know, how far is China willing to push? It's one thing to say that.
Mm-hmm.
It's another thing for China to push. China's buying a lot of stuff from Russia right now.
Sure.
At reduced levels.
Absolutely.
So China's got some reason to want the status quo to continue for a little bit longer.
Buying cheap energy out of Russia, hand over fist.
He does not. Xi Jinping does not want Russia to use a tactical nuclear weapon.
So what happens then? So if they do... Does China break alliance? I mean, whether they get up in the UN and say, hey, you know, we don't like this, but what do they really do?
China says, we're not going to buy your stuff anymore. India, which is also buying a bunch of stuff,
India
says, we're not buying your stuff anymore. Now, that's what's really propping them up, the Russians up, is that China and India and some of these other countries are buying a lot of their natural gas and oil.
Sure, they're getting a deal on it.
And they're getting a deal on it. But if they say, oh, we're not buying that anymore, even at reduced levels, that will knock the Russian economy out. Because they just don't make that much stuff.
Right.
If it's not natural gas and oil...
Yeah, petrostate. I mean, that's what they are.
Who the heck wants anything from Russia? I mean, what do they make that anybody wants?
No.
I mean, they don't.
No, people make money in the petrostate and then buy all the other things from around the world.
Yeah.
I mean, it was even a discussion with the election in Italy was a discussion of how it has affected some of Italy's economy, not to be able to send Ferraris and Versaces and you know all these things to Russia they used to.
Well, you know, Russia just doesn't have anything the world wants other than energy. And if the people that are buying their energy now say, that's it, they're done. As an economy, they're done. And that's when you do see regimes collapse, is when an economy collapses.
I'm told, though, that, you know, and you've told me from way back, that the break point from where Putin is to whoever might be next in command is a giant, it's a big canyon between.
Yeah, well, there's nobody that you or I can look to and say,
that
well, maybe he's the number two, or maybe he's the number two.
It's not that system.
It's not there.
Okay. So if that's being said, I've also heard those people, that whoever it might be, there's some that are to the right of Putin, and they're actually, the criticism of the war in Ukraine from them is that it's not being executed brutally enough, that Putin is putting kid gloves on and not fighting this thing.
That's the problem here is that you don't really have, because it's not a democratic, you know, sort of society, you don't really have the alternative point of view represented in the government. It's not there. So, you know, if you wanted to get Russia to the bargaining table with somebody other than Putin, Who is it? I don't know. I don't think – I haven't – all these things I've read, you've probably read a lot of the same things I've had. No one said, well, here's the guy. That's mm-hmm. who's going to do it. Because I don't think that person's out there.
That's – I mean, it's frightening.
It's – look, they've got lots of nuclear weapons. It's not good for a nuclear power to be desperate, and they're desperate right now.
You've encapsulated – that has been my worry since word go.
Yeah.
It's even more now.
Yeah.
And so I don't know what to say. I mean, you can support Ukraine, but you wonder, I mean, I would rather, as big a supporter as I am of Ukraine, which, you know, raises the hackles, a lot of people listen to my show, I would give Ukraine up to the Russians entirely if it meant there wasn't a nuclear war on this planet. You see what I'm saying? God bless Russian kids, I mean, the Ukrainian kids and moms and dads. But my job is, you know, I don't know if that's where this goes, but that's the, you know, that's like the thought I think when I lay my head down at night.
I don't think it will get to the point where we're lobbying nuclear weapons at one another. We, the United States, and the Russians are lobbying nuclear. I don't think it's going to get to that
tactical
point.
And then it misses, and then it's in a NATO country, and the NATO responds to Article 5.
It's way too many risks for even Putin, as desperate as he is, to run for that. But I do think that the risk is he'll start using tactical nuclear weapons in Ukraine.
And what is our response? That is,
I don't know. And but it can't. We can't just sit there. Can't just say, "Oh,
right.
That's okay."
Right. You can't. Exactly. You can't say, "Okay, well, that's cool. You're doing that." I mean, it's the same question I had: is however it would happen, whether it's a false flag or whatever. You have one of these Zaporizhia or some other nuclear power plant get hit, and now you have the radiation drifting across Western Europe. Now, is that an Article 5?
Oh, wow.
Is that a situation where they say, hey, we didn't do it, it was probably Ukrainian commandos that did it?
I don't know whether it's Article 5 or not, but it's enough for us to say that we've had it. That's it. We're not going to let you contaminate Europe, Russia. We're not going to let you do that. And I think Putin knows that. I don't think he's so out of it, sort of in his bubble, that he doesn't see that.
You think he's a rational player?
Typically, he has been, and I think he was rational saying up until last week, I'm not going to mobilize. But now that he's mobilized, he's showing a level of desperation that we haven't seen before. He miscalculated going into the war. Has he miscalculated again, and will he continue to miscalculate? And, oh, by the way, the Ukrainians miscalculated early on because they said Russia's not going to invade.
Mm-hmm.
So we got two people in this sort of fierce fight with one another, both of whom have some level of miscalculation on their side, and you got to worry about more miscalculations.
Yeah, and when you miscalculate in conventional war, it's one thing. When you miscalculate with a nuclear power,
it's bad.
Really bad. All right, coming back, more of our conversation with Congressman Bradley Byrne. We'll talk a little more Ukraine, but some politics here. Midterms coming up. I want to get your take on that.
Okay.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, we're back. Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5, and just a couple minutes here for a few more questions for Congressman Bradley Byrne, Mobile Chamber President and CEO. We'll switch gears for a second because Fred asks here, does the chamber still support annexation of West Mobile, and do you think the people understand how valuable it is to grow the city this way?
Yes, the chamber still supports annexation. That was a position they took long before I showed up, and I certainly agree with it. And if the time comes, and I think the time will be coming up here, we will make the business case, the economic case for why annexation is good for Mobile.
Okay. Let's talk politics for a second. Midterms not far off. What is it fair to expect? Because I've talked to so many elected officials here, and they started off, there's going to be 40 seats in the House. And then it's 30. And somebody says, I don't know, 30. Somebody else, pundit says it's 18. What's fair to expect for Republicans?
I think Republicans will take between 20 and 30 seats in the House.
Okay.
And I think the Senate is just too close to call across the board. We're doing well in some places and not in other places. So I think it's too close to call. And we may end up waiting for a week or two before we know about the Senate. It may be that close. So these are going to be, both sides are very motivated, okay? Hardcore Republicans, hardcore Democrats, they're both really motivated. It's the people in between. It's the independents. And who's going to get the independents? And right now, if you look at the polling, Republicans are getting more independents than Democrats are. So that's why I say they take the House, Republicans take the House by 20 to 30 seats. And despite what you read in the national news media, and don't listen to their polls, because their polls have been wrong, despite all that, I think that the Republicans still have a pretty good shot at taking the Senate. It may only be by one or two votes, but who cares?
Right. If you get
that's enough.
Well, and I almost look at it like chess pieces or value. Like, okay, polling will come out, but for an independent voter, is the Roe versus Wade being remanded to the states, is that more important than the economy? Or is inflation more important than climate change?
Inflation is the number one issue in America right now, okay?
Thanks, everybody.
And it is not going to change between now and first week in November. So inflation is going to be the dominant issue in people's minds. In some places, crime is going to be pretty high up there.
Yeah.
So you
play the crime card, and then somebody else plays the abortion card for independence. Which one wins, right?
Well, if you're an independent woman living in a suburb outside of Philadelphia or Pittsburgh, in a state that where you've got a real contest, it might matter with that woman. It may be like the motivation for her to vote for a Democrat other than a Republican. But for your typical independent voter, I don't think abortion is going to be what pushes their vote. I really don't.
And so, the crime card or the inflation card gives a plus to the Republican.
That's a more powerful message, and I think the Republicans are doing a good job of using that message in the way that they need to. And I just don't think that the dynamics change in the next 6 weeks. I don't think they do.
There we go. I appreciate your time as always, your insight into this. And if you weren't hyped up about getting a job in Mobile, Alabama, you should go back and listen to the beginning of the show.
Yeah. You come on, we need you.
Is it the old thing like my dad, you know, my dad's friend who would tell us if the fishing was good, he said, it's so good you have to hide to bait your hook because the fish will jump in the boat. Is it so you have to hide to keep from getting a job?
Yes, sir. All right. We need you.
All right, very good. Bradley Byrne, it's always good to see you.
Thank you, Sean. Good to be here.
All right, coming back, hour number two of Midday Mobile. Todd Stacey, Capital Journal and Alabama Daily News, joins us in just a few.